Here's a teaser for the upcoming July Editor podcast featuring Anika Mrose-Reese. To hear the entire episode in July, support the podcast through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/MindyMcGinnis to learn more or check out the link in the episode credits.
You have that manuscript you want and love. You go in and you take it to the team meeting and you discuss it. You discuss what the pitch will be. It's sort of a warm up to acquisitions. And it's where the editorial director of the imprint gives it the thumbs up because she also needs to feel that it's right for her list. Besides that it's right for your list as the editor. And once it gets the heads up at the editorial meeting, where also it's a chance to refine the pitch and talk through your vision, other members of the team may have read it, offer feedback as well. At the acquisitions meeting, there are many people in the room. There are people from sales, from marketing, from publicity, maybe from the art department. There's the publisher and the editorial directors of all the imprints often. Different publishers do their acquisitions meetings in different ways. At some publishers, all of the editorial directors from all of the imprints will be in the room for everything. Some places have acquisitions meetings where it's just the team that works on that imprint's books when they're presenting, and then the team leaves and the next team comes in for other presentations. But those people in the room, there's a finance person in the room. So you've written them a memo and you've sent out all or part of the manuscript, depending on your strategy for the acquisitions meeting. You've run a P&L, which is a profit and loss report with sort of projected sales numbers, what you think you'll need to pay the author, the advance are plugged in there. Publishers have different models for these, but every publisher has a margin, margins that have to be met in different categories. And all of those numbers are made up. And they are educated guesses, or sometimes they are manipulative guesses. Sometimes it's, well, if I'm going to acquire this, I know it's going to auction, I need six figures here. Although not all books that go to auction get six figures. If you have a sense of, here's what I might need to pay for this, you try to get to that number. And you try to get to that number by saying, well, that means I'll need to sell 18,000 books in hardcover and 25 over the 3 years of a paperback, for example. And you might know, well, I've done previous contracts with this agent where here are the royalties they insisted on, or things like that, that you're filling in with different numbers. IP stands for intellectual property. The house, the imprint, the publisher has come up with an idea for a project. They match that idea to an author and then work with the author to develop it. And the reason it's the house's intellectual property, because they came up with the idea. So even though the author is the one to write it and therefore develop an enormous part of it, it still belongs to the publisher. And that can take a few forms. Sometimes with an IP project, the publisher owns the copyright. And you can tell if a book is IP by looking at that copyright page. And if it says copyright HarperCollins, that probably means the editor came up with the idea. Sometimes the author holds the copyright, or sometimes the copyright is in the name of both the author and the publisher. So that's not always a sure tell. The reason that the house is interested in doing this is that the house controls and retains a significant portion of the subsidiary rights, which we call sub-rights. So that's foreign and translation. It's dramatic rights, which normally in a regular publishing contract, the author would not give the publisher any cut of dramatic rights. So if there's a movie, the publisher profits off that in that there are probably better book sales to go along with the movie, but they're not getting any percentage of the income from the movie. But if it's their project and they own the dramatic rights and they're the ones to sell them, perhaps give the author a generous split, but still they own and control that property. There are many different paths to and versions of success for a book or for an author, and usually it's an accumulation of many things. So it's easy to obsess over that one review that you want, or that one author blurb, or that list that your book does or doesn't appear on, or that blog interview you did or didn't do, or that tweet that you did or didn't send. But no one of those things is going to be what makes it or kills it. So I always tell authors to focus on the long game. Like I said, no editors wants to waste anybody's time, including their own. So one of the big reasons to submit an R&R is if you know you're going to acquire a project, but you need a stronger sample to bring to acquisitions. You're going to get a better contract if you do that work before it goes to acquisitions. That can be the reason for an R&R too. Sometimes it is an audition. Can we work well together? Can you pull off this change? Will these kinds of edits make the difference that need to happen in a manuscript? But for me, more often it was, help me make the best case for you.